gentlemen, welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled.
I am your host, Ken Molman. We're here every week at 7 p.m. on Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time, to bring you issues of the day involving liberty in the Commonwealth and really nationwide as well. I guess where we'll start off tonight is with the gun control issue. It's been obviously blowing up here for the past few weeks since the Sandy Hook tragedy that occurred, and we've talked about it some. There have been some additional things that have occurred. We've seen things that from the uninformed mind or the person not paying attention would be pro or con against any sort of gun control legislation. And I you know, don't necessarily think we need to get into the details of all of that, but it's very interesting to watch how the spin is being put on the gun control issue. There's all kinds of information flying around. If you want to watch and see the different things, you can go look at some of the friends that I have on Facebook and look at their Facebook feed and see the different stats and the different things that are being thrown around. And you know, both sides are coming at this with stats and figures and all kinds of things to justify this and justify that. But not many people outside of the liberty circles are really talking about what the Second Amendment was for and the history of the Second Amendment. And I'm sure most of you here in my audience are aware of what was going on with the Second Amendment and why it is the Second Amendment to the Constitution. And without going into the big, long history lesson, we had another form of government that governed the United States originally, which was the Articles of Confederation. When the Constitution came into play about 10 years later, some of the folks that were against creating the Constitution, they wanted to remain on the Articles of Confederation, were very worried because this was an expansion of power of the federal government above and beyond what they had under the Articles of Confederation. And in that regard, there was a serious concern that they needed to be able to make sure that this government didn't get out of control and become exactly what they had fought, more than a decade and a half earlier. They didn't want to have to go through this all over again, just in one generation for sure. And so what we ended up with was the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights were specifically outlined to ensure that no matter how big the government grew, there were certain inalienable rights that were outlined that the new federal government, the new version of the federal government, could not infringe upon. And, everybody's familiar with the major ones. Some are more familiar or familiar with the minor ones. But the Second Amendment, obviously, is one of the major ones. And everybody's aware of the Second Amendment. They're aware of the wording. And despite the fights over interpretation, you have to just simply look at who it was that wrote the Articles – or not the Articles, but the Bill of Rights, which group wrote the Bill of Rights, and look at the other things that they had written about those fundamental rights. Jefferson is very, very clear that the reason that the populace is to be armed is to protect themselves at all times, even from a repressive, oppressive government. And, that sounds crazy today, and it sounds extreme, and people don't really understand it. They don't get it because in many ways, we're not as well educated on why these rights exist as we should be. But they're there for a reason. And, we can have the conversation about do we need to have that full right anymore? Lots of people like to say, well, we need gun control. Well, really, we have gun control. We have gun control in the fact that at the writing of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, there was a definitive difference between armaments, shortened to arms, and munitions. There was a clear delineation between arms and munitions. And you'll notice that there is no right no right protected from government intrusion when it comes to munitions. only when it comes to armaments, arms for short. And I believe that that was intentional, that, you know, I don't think that the founders, and specifically even those on the side of not wanting to allow or not wanting to go to the Constitution, wanting to remain on the Articles of Confederation, I believe that they even recognized that everyone having a cannon might not be the best idea, that, you know, they had seen weapons beyond simple firearms, right, armaments, and there is no protected right to those weapons. So I contend always that the founders actually already built in gun control into the Constitution by explicitly leaving out munitions. And so you have that piece of it. I saw there were some laws that have gone around back and forth, different things trying to redefine or to clarify the Second Amendment. But at the end of the day, simply passing a law, that can be amended. Laws can be changed by the whim of Congress, even these supposed permanent laws, which are just silly because it's a law, and any law can be changed. It's not a constitution. If it's not a constitutional amendment, if it's not in the Constitution, then it can just be changed by another Congress with a simple majority. The only things that are really protected are those that are listed in the Constitution and those that are outlined as rights protected by the Constitution from our federal government. So if you want to start talking about putting gun control into place, the correct thing to do would be to start talking about a constitutional amendment. Now, obviously, that is not an easy task, and that's intentionally so. It was intentional that the task of amending the Constitution was a monumental task. Even in the days when it was signed, when we had 13 states, it was a monumental task. You look at the history of the signing of the Constitution, and almost all, there was actually a point where one or two colonies were not going to sign on, or one or two states, rather, were not going to sign on to the new Constitution. And it took a lot of maneuvering. It took a lot of PR. It took a lot of different factors to get the last couple of states to sign on. So and part of that deal was the Bill of Rights. So to amend the Constitution is a monumental task, and it was meant to be so. And there have been amendments, and we've seen amendments that have not gone in the direction of liberty. Obviously, you know, prohibition of alcohol is not a liberty direction, and thankfully that was repealed. Creating the income tax, I would say, is not in the interest of liberty. I would contend that direct election of senators, you can make a case either direction for that, but in my opinion, it broke the checks and balances and therefore hurt liberty. But there are ways to amend the Constitution. It has been done. And it should be done if you're going to infringe upon or try to change something that is outlined in the Constitution. So the gun control folks out there, really, you guys need to be talking about having a constitutional amendment. If you're going to go anywhere with it, that's where you go. This BS about just doing it with executive order, that's not going to fly. There's no way the public's going to stand for it. There's no way that constitutional law is going to stand for it. And I really doubt that the current Supreme Court is going to allow it to fly as well. I think that trying to do this by executive order, I think it's really more of a threat from the presidential or the executive branch to try to force the hand of the legislature into doing something, anything, but moving it their direction. And I think that that's really what this threat of an executive order is really all about, that it has nothing to do with whether or not they're really going to do it. It's all about just forcing the hand of Congress. So, you know, there's been a lot of conversation and a lot of talk, both sides, and whenever now anything happens with a gun, it's highly politicized. And, you know, obviously we talked about the Sandy Hook tragedy on this show in a previous episode a few weeks ago. And obviously our hearts go out, everybody's hearts go out to the parents that lost their children. You know, how horrible, how absolutely horrible. But, you know, you can't stop crazy. And we've talked about this as well, that, you know, the guy who committed the tragedies, and I use that name, I don't say his name, we've gone over that as well, but the guy who committed those tragedies wasn't supposed to have a firearm. He stole his mother's firearms and murdered her with them, and then went to the school and started murdering teachers and children. And, you know, you can't really stop that level of crazy. I mean, if you're willing to kill kids, you're crazy. There's no two ways about it. And trying to build a society that protects everyone against the one-off crazy is going to require a society with such an authoritarian fist that you're going to have to get permission to do anything from government. And you're going to have to fill out paperwork and explain reasoning. It's going to be like if you guys have ever gone across the border into Canada, right? You go through this whole rigmarole of, do you have anything to declare? What are you doing? Why are you going to Canada for? You know, how long are you going to be there? They ask you all these questions. And in a way, for legitimate reasons, although I think a lot of it's just silly. I mean, it's Canada. Come on. Yes, I'm going to Canada. I'm going up here to take it over with a Bowie knife and a bow and arrow. You know, no, I'm just going up there to visit some friends. But the point is that we're going to end up in a society where literally every time you want to leave your home to go do something, you're going to have to answer the same questions. What are you doing? Why are you going there? How long are you going to be there? When are you coming back? Do you plan on bringing anything back with you? What are you buying? What are you selling? Asking all of these questions, very, very invasive to personal privacy and very inconvenient. But it's the only way you can really try to get around or to protect people against crazy. And even then, I mean, you can lie. I mean, if somebody's crazy and they're intent on killing somebody, yeah, I'm going to the store to buy a loaf of bread. Oops, by the way, I brought a gun and I killed somebody. I didn't tell you that part. I mean, there is no way to legislate around crazy. And the more you try to, the more authoritarian ways that you try to dictate legislating around crazy, it just strips freedoms away from the average person without any sort of significant impact. And so what we need to be talking about is mental health, and we need to talk about, you know, trying to get people some help when they need help and dealing with that side of things if we're going to talk about anything, because gun control doesn't matter. It's not the cause. It's not the root cause of what happened in Sandy Hook. It's not the root cause of what happened in all these other events. Firearms are a tool. And it may make things more convenient. I'll grant you that. But by the same token, you know, the kid in Sandy Hook, he killed his mom with the guns. Then he hopped in the car and drove over to the school. So couldn't you make a case that we need car control? Because if he hadn't had that car, he couldn't have gotten to the school in a reasonable amount of time. It's just another tool. It's a tool that, when abused, is very dangerous. And I recently had this conversation with my daughter. My daughter is not quite a teenager yet, and we were having a conversation about things that are used as tools and things that can be abused and the dangers of things being abused and why it's important to respect certain tools. And it's an important conversation to have with your kids, that they understand that, yes, there are things that can make our lives better, but when they're abused, they can make our lives much worse. And it's a good conversation to have with our children. The point, I guess, is that there are a half a dozen things that could have happened, that could have been law, that could have tried to prevent the tragedy at Sandy Hook. If we eliminated cars completely and made them illegal and made it so you had a train everywhere you wanted to go, and there was a metal detector on every train and a body scanner on every train at the entrance to the train and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you could do all of that stuff But, man, how big brother do you want to get? How much do you want the government to know about you and invade your life under the auspices of safety? The reality is you can roll out of bed tomorrow morning, slip, fall, bump your head, and die. And that's horrible, but it's true. Bad things happen to good people. It happens. And I don't mean to chalk up the murder of these children as some sort of, oops, oh, well, it happens. I don't want to be cold and callous like that. Not at all. I mean, it's a horrible thing that happened. But bad things do happen. And you can't legislate everything. You can't legislate for every scenario. It's not possible. Even if you scripted every moment of every person's life, bad stuff can happen. Mistakes happen. Accidents happen. Things happen. Now, certainly, you know, Sandy Hook, the Colorado shooting, and the movie theater, all that, that wasn't an accident. That was crazy people. But just because somebody's life is scripted for them doesn't mean that they can't be crazy people. I mean, look at the example of actors. There are actors out there, and they're given a script, and they're told, follow this script, read it this way, do whatever. But you have certain actors that like to ad-lib. Anyway, they just throw stuff in. And as long as it works, the producer lets them get away with it, and it's all good because it's funny, and it adds it really adds an air of reality to the acting. And it adds a little bit of fun and a little bit of the personality of the actor themselves. And that's not a bad thing. I'm just saying, even when actors who are paid to read a script in a certain way, they're paid to do it, they deviate off, right? And they're professionals. The point is you can't legislate every aspect of every life. It just cannot be done. And so the gun control folks believe that, oh, if we just got rid of guns, everything would be fine. And it's not the case. Crazy people would still exist. Murder would still occur. Bad things just happen. Accidents would still happen. And, I wanted to get into this in a little bit, but one of the things that's bugging me greatly, and not really to shift gears, but to take a different approach on this, there's been a good bit of reporting now about a good friend of mine that was murdered about a week and a half ago now. My buddy Keith, real good guy, was a behind-the-scenes guy in the Liberty community here in Kentucky, was doing really well for himself. Started a there was a number of things that kind of fell into place to move things along. He was doing really well for himself. It's a short version. And he had recently started a firearms manufacturing company. And the firearms manufacturing company was originally kind of building custom pieces for existing weapons. And the long-term goal was to produce unique new weapons. And I don't know how much of that was public or not, but I talked to Keith probably once a month or so. Keith was a friend. He was always super busy, so I only talked to him once a month because I never wanted to bother him. I always felt like I was bothering him when I called him because he was always so, so busy. He kept himself very, very busy. And so he had started this firearms company, and they had located it in Georgia. And I seem to remember him telling me it had something to do with the state laws is why he had located in Georgia. But one of the other things that he was doing was a YouTube channel called FPS Russia, which is one of the most popular channels on YouTube. And basically they go out and they shoot really big guns and blow stuff up. And that's the YouTube channel. And there's a gentleman in there who is known as Dmitry, speaking with a Russian accent, and he goes out and blows stuff up. And the guy behind the camera, behind the scenes, the guy who was in charge of obtaining all the crazy weapons and in charge of doing all the marketing and all of that was my buddy Keith. And last, a week and a half ago, someone killed my friend Keith in cold blood. They murdered him, shot him in the back of the head. I haven't really talked to the family about the details. I feel weird just talking about it, but Keith was a hardcore Second Amendment proponent, and he knew what went on, and he believed that having a firearm helped protect people better. Not that it provided the last resort of protection, but that personal defense was a personal responsibility. He firmly believed that. And he said so very publicly. And given the nature of what he did with firearms manufacturing, it really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. And about a week and a half ago, well, I guess it's about a week and a half ago, somebody killed him in cold blood. Shot him in the back of the head, I guess, is what they're saying in the news. Again, I have not really sought all of the details from the family or anything like that. They know that it wasn't self-inflicted. The motive is questionable. Not really sure if it was murder or if it was robbery or not. Originally, they were questioning whether it was robbery. Then they said it wasn't robbery. Now it's back to, well, maybe it was robbery. But there were still a lot of firearms in the manufacturing plant that, you know, if it was robbery, you would think anyway, that they would go after or try to get more of those firearms, unless there was something specific they were after. But a lot of the gun control people are now saying, ha-ha, look, this guy died. You know, he thought he was all blah, blah, blah. And they're basically dancing on his grave. And it's absolutely disgusting. And, you know, if I know Keith well, you know, if he were here and able to tell us what to do, he'd be saying, find out who killed me, round up a posse and go take him out. But Keith was a funny guy because he liked to say things that were inflammatory. He was that kind of guy. Not that he deserved to die over anything like that, but the pro-gun people or pro-gun control people are pointing out stuff that he was talking about how he was at the movie theater and had a pistol on him, and he was hoping somebody would pull a Batman, like the Colorado shooting. You just had to know Keith to know he was goofing around. I mean, that wasn't – Keith was funny, and he liked to say inflammatory things like that. But – you know, these guys are, I mean, there are some really nasty, evil people out there that are basically saying, I'm glad he's dead and all this. I mean, just nasty, evil, horrible things. And folks, a father lost a son lost a father, a wife lost a husband. It's not a good scenario, and it's not a time for celebration. If you want to talk about this in the realm of gun control, that can be done. But not like that. Not dancing on his grave. I mean, literally, there are people saying, I'm glad he's dead because all pro-gun people need to die. Really? What in the world is wrong with you people? I mean, seriously, it's a policy debate. And people hold different positions. And you need to respect people for holding different positions if you're going to have a rational conversation and a rational decision-making process. I was just so disgusted when I started seeing those comments, the things on Twitter. And I mean, it's so evil. They're posting them to Keith's Twitter feed. They're directing them at Keith. I mean, what sick SOB is sitting there saying, ha ha, you're dead, on his own? If there's anybody who needs to have their head examined, it's the folks that are dancing on the grave of somebody who's been murdered. You need to be able to separate your crazy emotion and hatred of firearms from the fact that somebody just died. Somebody was just murdered. We can talk policy. But, Dan, you don't need to be dancing on the grave. It's just so, so wrong on so many levels. And it really, really upsets me. And that's something that we on the other side need to remember, too. You know, there are people, and I've seen it not to this extent, that try to do the dancing on the grave stuff. I've seen a little bit of it about the Sandy Hook stuff. People, when people die, it is never, ever appropriate to use those dead people as political puppets. They're dead. They were murdered, whatever. It's never appropriate. Let's have a real conversation, depersonalized, because the reality is when you start personalizing it all, it's all anecdotal anyway. It has no bearing on the real debate. Don't use the bodies of people who have been murdered to make your political point. It's just wrong on all accounts. We can talk about the number of people who were murdered nationwide by a firearm. We can talk about the incidents of mass killings with firearms. We can talk about that stuff. We can do comparisons with other countries. We can look at trends. We can do a lot of good conversation and debate without making it personal, without dragging in people that have passed away recently. I mean, they haven't even buried Keith yet. It happens tomorrow. I'm going to the funeral myself. And people are out there, it's just wrong. So, likewise, I ask our folks, please don't engage in such behavior. And when you see that type of behavior, don't respond in kind. It's not using dead people as your political puppet is just horrible. Don't do it. Please. Because whether it's my friend Keith, it's the kids at Sandy Hook, the folks at the Colorado movie theater, whoever. That was somebody's kid, man. Somebody loved them. It was somebody's friend. And there's no reason to personalize a policy debate. It doesn't advance the debate. It actually makes it worse because you start dragging emotions in and you turn off the brain and you turn on the heart and all of a sudden you're swearing at some dude you don't even know. It's just not right. So I ask of all sides in the debate, stop making it personal. Stop being ugly. There is a special place in hell for the people that dance on the graves of people who have been murdered. And I only hope that those people see the error of their ways and, you know, whether they believe in God or not, ask their, you know, do some serious reevaluation. You believe in God, you better ask for forgiveness. Reevaluate what you're doing and live a better life and don't be so hate-filled and evil. It's just wrong. We can have a conversation about gun control. We can have a conversation about lots of different policies. But when you start turning on the emotions and start making it personal, that's when the debate ends and the fights, the personalized partisan fights begin. And isn't that the problem? I mean, we need to do better, and I say we. I am a pro-Second Amendment guy all the way. So I call on our side to be the bigger people, to not make it personal, to talk about stats and facts and figures and acknowledge that there are people that die from firearms. Let's not sugarcoat the situation or ignore facts. But I can tell you for sure that my buddy Keith would not have wanted his death to be used by the pro-gun people as some kind of see gotcha moment. Keith was a firearms enthusiast. He was a great man. He was 32 years old. He always knew how to make me laugh. He was funny as could be. The last time I talked to him, I was razzing him because part of the whole way he worked, the FPS Russia channel, is all about views and likes and that. And I was harassing him, saying I like some other channel better. I'm just messing with him, but I hope, I don't know. I just, I hope wherever Keith is, he's at peace. I hope his family finds peace, and I hope the people in the gun control debate, you know, learn from this or and from other things to not spike the football, to not dance on the graves of murdered people, to let's have a real conversation and one that is not dominated by emotion and hate, but one that's focused on solving problems. So with that, I'm going to take a break. We're at the bottom of the hour. I've really kind of run long here, but yeah, we're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about some of the stuff going on at the General Assembly and smoking bans and all kinds of good stuff. So stay tuned. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network.
This ain't a song for the broken hearted.
There we go. All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And I see we have a call in the queue here. I don't know if he wants to come on or not, but we'll get to that in a moment. I always at the bottom of the hour do the business here, so we'll do it quickly. The if you'd like to advertise on this or any of the other My View Matters radio network shows, and we have shows Sunday through Thursday at 7 p.m., you can do so by emailing myviewmatters, all one word, myviewmatters@aol.com. And the rates are very reasonable, and we reach thousands of people a week. So if you are interested in doing that, just send an email again to myviewmatters@aol.com. Helps keep shows like this one on the air. So with no further ado, I see the caller does want to speak, and I know who this is. Hey, Frank, how's it going?
Hey, Ken, how's it going, man?
All right. I probably should have ended the show with the first segment rather than started it, but I anyway. What do you got for us, Frank?
Well, forgive me. I just now tuned in, so I'm coming in cold. But yesterday we went to an event in Jackson County, Kentucky, for Sheriff Denny Payman. I'm not sure if that's how you say his last name or not, but super nice fellow. And he's the sheriff there and has taken a stand that he will not participate in any gun confiscations if such a thing arises. He's made a pledge to stand by the Second Amendment and to uphold their Second Amendment rights no matter what the federal government tells him he has to do.
Well, that should be applauded. And I actually know of a couple of other sheriffs for sure that would sign on to such a or take such a pledge. You know, the sheriff, the constitutional office of sheriff, is probably the most important law enforcement official in the county. And unfortunately, several counties in Kentucky, you know, my home county originally of Campbell County being one of them, has in many ways neutered the county sheriff's office, which is unfortunate because the sheriff is an important role. I believe it's very important to have an elected top law enforcement official in every county because at the end of the day, he needs to be accountable to the people and do what the people want as far as law enforcement is concerned. And when you take that out of the hands of the people and put it into the hands of bureaucrats, you know, the results are pretty predictable, that you're going to end up in a scenario where the bureaucracy, as all bureaucracies do, are in it to perpetuate themselves and to grow themselves and to protect themselves rather than do what's best for the people. And, I'm all about having the top official.
I know that you know this, Ken, that the sheriff has veto authority over federal law enforcement, that if the sheriff does not want to allow federal authorities into his county, the federal authorities are required by law to leave.
Well, and there's some question about that, but yeah, I have heard that. I always wonder what would really happen in that scenario. But
yeah, what would really happen is they would just do what they wanted to do anyway, but you know.
Right, right. But the point is to have good elected officials in general anyway. And, you know, if we're getting good people into office that are focused on protecting our rights and our liberties rather than growing their little fiefdoms and, you know, growing their power bases, that's a good thing no matter what position it is, whether it's sheriff, dog catcher, which we don't really elect, but whatever. You know, the point being we should be focused on getting good constitutionally focused people into office to protect our rights.
Exactly. I only wish that here in Fayette County, I'm from Lexington, as you know, that I only wish that our sheriff was is oriented toward the Constitution. She's said some things that make me think that if there's a gun grab, she's going to be participating in it wholeheartedly. She's tried to,
you know, probably be federal grant money. There will probably be federal grant money involved. I mean, that's how this stuff really rolls out. The feds aren't going to roll into every town and take the guns away. What they'll do is they'll give out incentive money to local sheriffs and local communities for doing this or doing that, just like they always do. That's how they implement this stuff, because the reality is the federal government doesn't have the forces to enforce most of the stuff that they do, and so they do it with money. And Kentucky, being a state that is, we get $1.50 back for every dollar we send to the feds, you know, that plays really, really loud here, and that's how a lot of our liberties are usurped, is they're bought and sold by the bureaucracy, And, you know, that gets into a couple of other things I have coming up here on the show. But it's the unfortunate reality is that we're basically being grant moneyed away or, you know, our rights are being taken away by local officials in search of the almighty dollar.
And so much of that goes back to the fact that our states are in debt, our municipalities are in debt, and so in their minds they feel powerless to say no. You know, debt is a very evil trap, and it has ensnared us as a country. It has ensnared us as individuals, and that's how the federal money becomes more and more powerful as states get more and more desperate for funds. They really have a harder time saying no.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, I guess kind of parlaying this into where I wanted to go with the show. You know, there are obviously the General Assembly's in session. This is a short session, so thankfully there's not a whole lot of bills to read through, at least at this point. And one of the things that I'm noticing is that, you know, there's a number of pro-liberty bills that have been produced, specifically HB 13, House Bill 13, basically reiterates that the state and the United States Constitution trump international law. So if the U.S. passes something, you know, the state and the U.S. Constitution play first before federal law. And I like seeing that kind of thing. I don't know that it necessarily has teeth. You know, other things out there that are actually trying to solve the problem. House Bill 20 forbids future legislators from getting a pension for serving. I wish that would actually retroact a little bit, but the point is that these are things
What do you think the odds of that passing are? I would say it's not likely to pass.
Probably not, at least in that format. It'll probably be something to that effect. They're going to have to do something with the pensions. We're going bankrupt in the state. You talk about drivers of debt in the state, and that's one of the main drivers. I mean, we are billions in the hole in debt in the pension system. And, you know, if they had solved the problem that they knew about back in the early 80s and worked on it then, it'd be a lot less painful to deal with, you know, then than it is now. But unfortunately, short-term thinking makes it so that I don't care. I won't be in office when it blows up. And so – you know, they kicked the can down the road, and here we are today, you know, a few billion dollars in debt, or the systems are a few billion dollars underfunded, and, you know, the time's going to come when it's time to pay the piper and start paying out these pensions, and the money's just not going to be there. And the only way to do that is going to be to take more money from the feds or raise taxes. I mean, that's where else is the state going to get money? They can't print it.
Why don't we start with the pensions of the legislators who were in power when these budgets were not balanced, and let's take the money from them first.
Well, I mean, I am in favor of a constitutional amendment that basically destroys the legislative pension right away. Just dissolves it, makes it illegal, takes the money that's in their pensions, disperses it to the other pension systems and whatever, but get rid of it. There is no reason that someone who is elected to serve the public should be getting a retirement for that. There's absolutely no reason,
especially when it's supposed to be a part-time job. It's not supposed to be a full-time job.
Well, and it's not even necessarily full-time, part-time, whatever. It's more, for me anyway, fundamentally, you're there to serve the public, not to earn a retirement. I mean, that's not the purpose of serving in public service. That's not what you're supposed to be there for.
And it should also be illegal for anybody to vote themselves a raise in the public sector. Anytime that you've got Congress voting for its own raises or the state legislators voting for their own raises, I mean, come on, isn't that a little bit of a conflict of interest?
Oh, it absolutely is. And in fact, Congress has gotten U.S. Congress has gotten savvy about it. And so what they've done is they passed an automatic increase law that basically requires Congress to take action to stop those automatic increases. Rather than voting for a raise, they now have to vote to not get a raise. And so inaction results in their own raise. Oh, yeah, that happened, I forget, a decade ago or so, maybe a little more. And that was because the legislators would always get beat up for voting to increase the pay of the Congress. And so they solved that problem by creating a law that does it automatically. And now they have to vote to stop it. And so, well, surprise, surprise, they don't vote to stop it. And so they get these automatic increases no matter what. And that's, you know, the only way that kind of stuff stopped is if we pay attention and hold people accountable for it. You know, I'd like to call upon every congressman in Kentucky to propose and get on board with a bill that would end that practice. You know, all six of our congressmen and both of our senators.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that.
But what's the likelihood of that happening, you know, taking money out of their own pocket? You know, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Right. And so you've got to find out, you know, who you can vote for, who's the right person, and at least says the right things. And, you know, if they get up there and they don't do them, then kick them out and find somebody else that says they'll do it. You know, that's going to have to be that awakening, and we've talked about that on the show in previous shows, the awakening that has to happen in order for things to get better. That, you know, relies on you and me and everybody else out there to do that. You know, we have to be the ones paying attention.
I'm reminded all the time of the quote, "You get the government that you deserve," and we have to pay attention as a society to our government. Otherwise, we get run over, we get robbed, our liberties get taken away. If we're not vigilant, this is what happens. And apparently, for decades, for generations, we have not been vigilant as people.
No. Hey, it's easy to be asleep. It's easy not to have to worry about this stuff. It's a lot easier, really, at least until the day of reckoning comes when all of a sudden the bill is due.
Right.
But the point being that it's easy. I mean, I would rather not have to do all this stuff. There's plenty of other things, other hobbies that I had before getting into politics. You know, I still carry my full-time job, and I had to drop all my other hobbies to be able to engage in politics. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. I don't want to say this to dissuade people from getting engaged, but, you know, it's hard sometimes. But, you know, I do it because I believe it's the right thing to do, and I do it because I believe it's the right thing to protect my children and future generations of this country, to perpetuate this country and try to make people understand the reasons we have these rights and why they're important and to protect those rights. And, that's the joy of politics.
Unfortunately, there is no last bastion of the free markets anymore. You know, China is more free market based than we are now.
In some ways,
there are signs now that they're falling back into their usual despotism, which that's, you know, all governments do that. It seems like throughout history that it's inevitable that as soon as somebody has something, governments start looking at that with an envious eye and figuring out how they can get their hands on it.
Sure. I mean, the people in power want to retain power and they want more power. And, you know, part of having power is having the money. So that's not a real big surprise. Another real good bill that's been proposed, or at least based on the summary of the bill, is House Bill 12. It requires a roll call vote on any expenditures being increased. So in other words, instead of automatic expenditure increases or, you know, things where they may do a floor vote, you know, up or down based on a yay or nay and how loud it sounds, that it would require a roll call vote for every such action. And that's a good thing. Make sure people are on record and there's transparency and find out where people stand on things. You know, that's a good thing.
Did they not have a roll call vote on every bill? I thought they had a roll call vote on every bill.
Yeah, I think there are things, though, that are automatic. You know, in the same way that the legislators' pensions go up, I don't know. I don't quite understand all of the proceedings that happened in Frankfurt, and I'll be the first person to admit that. You know, I don't know everything, but, you know, requiring a roll call vote on any increase in expenditures, that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's if it's not something today, I'm sure there'll be some way to – they always find some way to sneak around the law, you know, just like how our state budget is supposed to be balanced every single year. And somehow, as long as checks don't bounce, that's balanced, even though we drive ourselves deeply into debt all the time. So, you know, that is definitely one. But there's some
other
interesting.
They've added another committee. They've given power to yet another agency, not a committee, but an agency, to basically make up their own rules and enforce them however they see fit without going
right.
through the legislative process. They just recently gave some drug enforcement agency, I don't know if it's probably under the Cabinet for Human Resources, to just empower them basically to just do what they want to do. And yet when you do that, you take away any kind of mechanism to fight it. Because you can't go to court because you haven't been charged with anything. It's just an agency
right.
doing what they want to do, and how do you fight that?
Right. Well, yeah, and then you end up in messy, long court battles that go all the way up to the state Supreme Court, even federal, you know, fighting all that, and it's expensive and time-consuming and, you know, nerve-wracking and grueling and, you know, it's very, very difficult to fight the bureaucracy, more so than it is to fight to get better legislators in. It's harder to fight the bureaucracy, so your best bet is to put legislators in that then legislate to stop the bureaucracy, and that's the best approach to fight it. And Frank, I'm going to put you back on hold, buddy, because we only have a few more minutes here in the show, and I want to get through a couple more things, but I appreciate you calling in.
See ya.
Thanks. So getting through a few other things that are going on here, there are a couple of bills out there to raise taxes on cigarettes and rolling papers to help put money into some sort of emergency pension fund if such a fund were created. I haven't seen anything that says to create that fund, but that's one that's out there. There's stuff about not counting legislative pensions after August 1st, 2013. You can't count non-legislative time towards your legislative pension. There's one that starts immediately. There's a couple of bills out there on the drug policy side, one that, again, chasing the synthetic marijuana folks, expands the definitions and does all kinds of different things to try to really crack down on that, which, you know, we're cracking down on it while other states are going the other direction, but whatever. There is a Senate bill I know out there to legalize medical marijuana. That's from Perry Clark. Personally, I think that is actually probably something that needs to really be examined because there are medicinal purposes, despite what anyone would say. And that's another issue for another show. We've talked about it on others, and we can get back to that some other day. You know, there's a few others out here allowing alcohol sales on Election Day, but allowing communities to outlaw it on Election Day. So it's statewide, it's legal, but let the local communities decide. Get into that home rule thing, right? And home rule is a very good concept. Basically, it allows the people of the local community to decide their own fate, to determine whether or not what's legal, what's not, to let people decide, hey, you know, we want to have alcohol sales. I mean, we do this already with alcohol anyway. We want to have local alcohol sales in this county or in this city or whatever. That's a very good thing because it allows the people of the local community to decide one way or another, hey, do I want this in my community? And I think that's probably a good way to approach it. Some of my hardcore libertarian friends would say, well, that just means that the local people are infringing on your rights. And yeah, true, but would you rather have a small community where your voice is much louder and you can raise your objections and make your voice heard on a particular issue, or would you rather have the heavy hand of the state government come down and crush it on you and, you know, you're one person in 4.4 million people and they just don't care? You know, it's much easier when at the local level to fight things that are oppressive towards our personal liberty at the local level, and that's why I very much support the concept of home rule and pushing as much down to the local communities as possible. I think that that's good for liberty in general. And speaking of home rule, we've talked about in the past, and it's going to come up again soon, the statewide smoking ban. Now, no bill has been filed, as far as I can tell, so far in the statewide smoking ban fight. But tomorrow night on KET at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I will be on a panel of folks talking about a statewide smoking ban again. You know, these issues don't go away because the pro-ban folks have federal funding, and they have funding from pharmaceutical companies and funds and trusts and all of that kind of stuff. And they make no mistake, it pumps hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, into Kentucky through into the bureaucracy, which, again, as we've discussed in this show and others, the bureaucracy's goal is to grow itself and to better implant itself and to grow its necessity and to protect its little fiefdom and to grow its fiefdom. So this stuff doesn't go away. It comes back year after year after year after year. And it will continue to do so. It's not going anywhere. But one of the big things that they're saying now, the reason we need a statewide ban now, is because now we have all these different laws across the state in various places, and they're not the same. And boy, oh boy, we really need to make it so it's a unified policy across the state. That is counter to everything that home rule does. It's counter to letting local communities decide what's best for their local community. And, of course, you know, we can sit here and beat up on the smoking ban pretty easily all day and night. You know, up here in northern Kentucky, we beat back the one in Campbell County. We stopped the one from even getting proposed in Boone County, and Kenton County's got rolled back pretty significantly and became what's known as a restaurant ban only. If you had a liquor license, you could get around it. And, you know, the majority of what you're doing when you pass a smoking ban is banning it in restaurants and bars, and that's really what these smoking bans really do. And I've talked to a number of folks around the state, and I've been trying to gather more and more information, but the majority, the overwhelming majority now of restaurants in northern Kentucky are smoke-free. I've talked to some folks out and about in the state that are telling me that their counties have as few as just one smoking restaurant left. You know, everything else has gone smoke-free voluntarily. And that's fine. I'm all about letting business owners decide what's best, and you can sit here and we can talk about the free market implications of going smoke-free, and that in the long run, yes, restaurants do better. Most restaurants do better smoke-free, except for the 24-hour diners that need to have the smoking for the people that come in late at night who smoke. We can talk about those issues, but the point is to let the free market and the local communities kind of figure this out. And having a hammer placed upon these local communities who have made their decisions at the state level and just crush it down across the state. Folks, I've been all over the state, and the needs of Western Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky, Southern Kentucky, Northern Kentucky, Louisville, Lexington, all these areas are different. It's a different community. It's a different mindset. It's a different type of community in each of these areas. And even in each individual county, the people are different. They live in those communities because they choose to live there because they like the things that are going on in that community for the most part. So to have a uniform policy crammed down from Frankfurt is the wrong direction. And you can hear more about that tomorrow night, KET, 8 o'clock. Looking forward to it. I'll be on with Susan Westrom, state rep who keeps proposing it. Mike Harmon, who's the rep that is against it. And then Dr. Jones, who's from not the Indiana Jones movies, but from former American Medical or Kentucky Medical Association president. Well, folks, we're about out of time, so thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network.